Hello, and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map, and today my guest is Lawson Gao, founder of The Cannon, a co-working and entrepreneurial hub with three locations in Houston. Lawson, who's the son of David Gao, the CEO of Innovation Map's parent company, joins the show to discuss how he's developing new connectivity technology for The Cannon amid the COVID-19 shutdown. Lawson, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So Lawson, tell me a little bit about how this has been going with you, this coronavirus crisis, shutting down The Cannon and not being able to have your co-working center have co-working.
Well, it's been a bummer. I mean, just like everybody else, you know, it's been disruptive to sort of the status quo. And we kind of felt internally like we were in an exciting moment where we'd gotten into the big building, we'd gotten into a good rhythm. And now, obviously, it's not a great time to be in the business of packing a bunch of people into creative office space and throwing a revolving door of events. But it's okay. You know, we've got a really resilient team, and we have adapted well to working remotely with each other. You know, spirits are high, morale is high. It's been a good time for us to lean into figuring out how we can explore adding value to our startups in our community virtually, and you know, providing digital services. And we've gotten to it's been a nice forcing device to begin to build those out at a quicker pace.
So what sort of technology and virtual tools have you kind of created, and where's that headed?
Yeah, so it's something that was always on our roadmap. I think we did a great job building a tight-knit community in physical space, but we always wanted to layer on top of that great virtual services that we could provide to be sort of robust and really value adding programmatically to people that were outside of the community or, you know, part of our virtual community in and around Houston. So we'd always wanted to do that. And we now have accelerated that. We've got our team, a lot of our team was used to operating physical space. And so, you know, at the beginning of this, they were a bit idle, but we've repurposed them a lot in a lot of ways to bulking up these services. And it's everything from sort of generic educational content for people in sort of different life cycles of entrepreneurship to actually running more hands-on specific programs when startups are really in a time of need, and providing more curated hands-on kind of custom-built bespoke support. And there's a lot of small businesses that have been disproportionately affected by everything that's going on, and it's a really tough time for some. So we're trying to be as helpful as possible.
Yeah. So one of the things that I guess has come out of this, you know, way to reach out to startups in need of help is the Cannon Emergency Response Team program. So how did that come about? And, you know, what does that program really look like for startups who are going to be involved in that?
Yeah, it's been great. It is the Cannon Emergency Response Team. And again, we always wanted to do this. We had always talked about doing this, but it embodies the spirit of why the Cannon exists, that we are a community. And when there is an entrepreneur that's really in a time of acute need, you know, a startup that's really struggling and hanging on by a thread, that the community would sort of wrap their arms around the company and do whatever that organization needed to weather the storm and get through the hard time. And we wanted to have these sort of crisis management programs that picked up these startups when they fell. And so actually it's been a great time to roll that out and to double down on that. And so we have, people that have started to apply, we've started to actually run these programs, and it's a very intensive kind of all hands on deck operation where we are taking a deep dive into the company, their struggles, their challenges, and kind of developing strategy that will enable their success. It's really, really cool. I mean, if you're a Cannon employee, it's sort of why you got into the game, right? It's really because you love startups and got a big heart for entrepreneurs, and you want to see them be successful. And this is getting in the trenches with them.
Yeah, for I guess crisis response programming, is it something that's structured and kind of doled out to all participants, or is it something that's really a case-by-case basis where you're working individually with startups and their like specific needs, I guess?
Yeah, good question. It is case-by-case. Unfortunately, many companies are in crisis right now. The way it was originally conceived was, every once in a while, there's going to be a startup that really is on sort of the brink of collapse. And that's when we spring into action. Now, there's lots of companies that are really struggling for various sort of COVID related reasons. But it is still sort of, as needed, although unfortunately the volume is pretty high of entrepreneurs that are in a tough spot.
So with you and your team working with startups, kind of responding to the crisis, what are you seeing as the biggest issues that they're facing?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of hard to answer because the Canon community, the Canon companies are so diverse in terms of the stage they're at, the need they have, the industry, the sector, and so it's kind of all over the place. But obviously, the inability to really develop new customers. I mean, if you're B2B, lots of corporations are really hurting. If you're oil and gas, even more so in the Houston area. An additional layer of challenges in that industry. If you're B2C, consumer buying is way down, and sort of paradoxically, the consumption of like social media and online ads and online content is at an all-time high of all of human history. But everybody in this moment, it's sort of a great pause has fallen over the country, and everybody doesn't really have a lot of reason not to just say, well, let's see what 30 more days looks like. We don't really know what's coming. And so it's tough.
You've kind of addressed some industries that are affected, but I wonder if there's a specific stage of startup that is more vulnerable in the, coronavirus crisis. Is it the early stage startups, maybe later stage startups? Who's most affected?
Yeah, that's a good question. And my answer will be anecdotally driven. I think there is, I think on the it's sort of a parabola of difficulty. I think that early when it's a one man show, one woman show, or it's maybe two founders or something, they're so lean that they can be, they can weather the storm more effectively. They can really cut back and be flexible. They don't have sort of management issues of trying to pivot a team into a new way of working, and they don't have the salary load. And I think that, they're poised just because of timing to have a higher rate of survivability. And then I think on the other end of the parabola, well, I don't know, maybe as I'm thinking about it, I might be wrong, but I think on the other end, there's sort of a point where you've got a couple hundred employees, you've sort of almost gotten out of the startup life and gotten sort of a good steady dog trot forward and have enough momentum that yes, you may need to be cutting a lot of employees and getting a lot leaner, but at least you have kind of the cash in the bank and momentum and customer base to survive. I think though that tweener group of you've gotten a little traction, you've got some money, you've started to hire some people, and maybe you've hired some people ahead of the customer acquisition and the revenue, those groups are potentially in a tougher spot.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I've heard that from others too, that it's that kind of real high growth stage startups that might be most affected. But I do wonder if you think that Houston is at an advantage, our ecosystem being relatively young compared to some of the larger innovation ecosystems. Do you think Houston startups have an advantage, being here in Houston, being in Texas, and being kind of in an earlier stage ecosystem?
If you take the oil and gas situation out of the conversation, then yes, I buy that. I don't know what's going to happen to the energy sector. And So that will add an additional wrinkle that is particularly problematic for Houston. But I do think that that's true. I think that, I mean, there is this this environment of, like, you know, inflated valuations and fat VC funding rounds and sort of overhiring. I was talking to a startup in Atlanta yesterday that had gotten like $50 million in funding, and it hired three lawyers. And I'm like, how could you need three lawyers? You would never hire three lawyers immediately. By the way, they're in the media industry. If you didn't have so much cash in the bank. And so I think that, Houston, because it's a sort of an early stage innovation ecosystem, its startups are, we don't have unicorns walking around, and its startups are in that earlier stage where they may be able to weather the storm. I think there's reason to be optimistic there.
Of course, the oil and gas crisis is not something we can ignore, but it's definitely something to keep in mind. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about co-working, because it is co-working and maybe even greater real estate has been pretty affected by COVID-19. So what do you really see happening as we recover, as we come back as a society that leaves their homes and goes back to work? Where's co-working going to be? What role is it going to play?
Yeah, that's interesting. And maybe the answer should be in two different categories. One is the perspective on co-working, and commercial real estate is really hurting. And I think that, of course, it's unrealistic to assume that there's not going to be a hit on companies that are signing long-term leases through this. I mean, tenants have already started to cancel their agreements and trying to back out and downsize, and it's unrealistic to think that they're that small companies are just going to work in Starbucks forever. So I actually think coming out of this, there's going to be a real place in the world for co-working, that co-working is not going away. In fact, it's going to be even more necessary than ever. I think that that there's going to need to be sort of policies and procedures that are much more mindful of sort of health and wellness than the spread of infection in these places that we haven't previously had to do it. And then I think sort of in the second bucket is innovation districts and innovation hubs as a whole, and co-working being oftentimes sort of the venue for this innovation activity. And what's interesting is that if you read the academic literature on innovation districts, it everywhere all the time it's talking about density and collisions and interactions and an ecosystem, a swirling hustle and bustle of people that are interacting with each other to get that velocity of mind share, to get that innovation activity. And it sort of reads like a how-to manual for like how to spread disease. So there is now currently a gap in the academic literature around innovation districts. What role can innovation districts play in this, and how can they be more mindful of things in light of this pandemic? I mean, it's going to change things. It's going to, feel really different immediately. And I think that'll taper off and it'll start to feel more normal, but there will be a little bit of a new normal, and especially with innovation districts, there's going to have to be more consciousness around how we keep people safe in these hubs of innovation.
That's a good point. And what do you really envision that as for the canon? I know, as coronavirus is seeming to be more of a threat kind of a few weeks ago, you saw heightened sense of awareness, social distancing, early social distancing, more, hand sanitizer stations, for instance. And in a lot of ways, as we reenter society, we're going to see those again and see those policies, I guess, and procedures increase. So what sort of things did the canon do leading up to kind of the closures, and what will you continue to do as things open back up?
That's a great question. And that's sort of the question on everybody's mind across all industries and sort of walks of life. And so, leading up to it, we definitely, a team built in sort of more infrastructure and programming around staying healthy and you know, as we got closer and closer to, you know, the rise of the pandemic, you know, locally and you know, throughout Texas and Houston, we began to ramp that up more. I mean, and you know, so if people did still want to come into the Cannon, we really we put sort of stations of hand sanitizer throughout. We put kind of reminders in the sinks and the bathrooms and kitchens throughout the whole place of, you know, wash your hands. And we did watch and were reminding people that, and I'm a hugger too. So I had to hug less and handshake more. And then maybe it became fist bumping and then elbow bumping and then sort of social distancing. And that was tough, but, you know, we've got 750 people that are flowing through our doors every day. So, we needed to make sure we prioritized their safety. But I think going forward, I don't know. I'm torn as to what the new kind of world will look like. I think there's a tendency, because we're all sort of getting cabin fever, quarantined in our homes, to be hyperbolic about like how this is going to change the world so drastically. And maybe there's some merit to that, but I also feel like there's a resiliency to the human spirit and also an insistence on just like living life uninterrupted. And we will get back to a place of normalcy. And I think it'll be revolutionary, not evolutionary. I think it'll be gradual. And I think that, you know, when we go back to quote real life, there will still be people that are infected. And so we'll have to be very careful about that. And I think that, you know, day one, we'll be very careful. There may be sort of 50% of people that are just electively staying in quarantine. And those other 50 that are out in the world, that they're going to be certainly hugging less and taking other precautions, maybe wearing face masks. But I think that, you know, as weeks go by and months go by, that we'll start to remember what normal life was like, and maybe there'll be some, we'll take some of this experience with us and keep it with us forever. And that'll be a nice way to, you know, remind us to be healthy. But I think, you know, ultimately I like to believe that we can get back to sort of like the normal cadence of life.
RIP to hugging, man.
I know. Tell me about it.
So I know just from reporting on the Cannon and knowing you, you had some major growth plans for the Cannon. So I want to ask you kind of how everything has affected your plans for growth. And I know you still have big plans, but maybe they've just adjusted to a new timeline and to some new priorities.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so the plan for the Cannon has always been the same and continues to be the same, that we feel like Houston's innovation strategy needs to be customized to Houston. Houston's incredibly sprawling. We've got big population clusters scattered all over 660 plus square miles. And so we can't just take, you know, from an innovation hub standpoint, we can't take what we've seen be successful in St. Louis and Philly and Pittsburgh, because that won't work here. We won't be able to sort of democratize access to innovation support and facilities and infrastructure. We won't be able to enable everybody throughout the greater Houston area to have access to these resources. So, you know, the Cannon's mantra has always been, we're going to create sort of a constellation of spaces, a whole smattering of locations wherever there are these significant population clusters, be that Pearland or Sugarland or Conroe or even maybe all the way to Galveston. But there really kind of needs to be, you know, 6 to 9 locations maybe. And of course there'll be smaller locations, but that's always what we wanted to do. And then to better connect all of those programmatically so that community members kind of get the same experience and quality programming when they're members of any Cannon location. And none of that's really changed. Of course, there's been a slowdown of development. We've been working directly with these cities and these economic development groups to develop sort of a playbook for what their innovation hub, their innovation strategy should look like. And the cities are preoccupied with, of course, keeping their residents safe. And so there has been a pause on some of those projects, but generally we're marching forward, and we've got active projects that are continuing to we're continuing to make progress on, and so we're excited to kind of accelerate that when things do get back to normal.
Well, considering that and kind of the unpredictability of, you know, the coronavirus and how we're going to pull out of this, I wonder if I can ask you one of my favorite questions to ask people on the podcast is, you know, what keeps you up at night, especially in this time? You know, what are you closely watching that, you know, will greatly affect your business?
That's a good question, Natalie. And I'm glad you didn't ask me that a month ago, because I would have either had to lie or say, in all honesty, what's keeping me up is that I don't know if the cannon will make it through this. Thankfully, that is no longer the case. I mean, our team has been really awesome, and I'm really grateful for how incredible they've adapted to sort of our new way of operating. And we are going to be able to hang in there. But, you know, there were so many unknowns a month ago that, you know, my mind went to this doomsday scenario of, the cannon's my baby, and my baby's in trouble. And, you know, I that was keeping me up at night. I was worried that, you know, that we just wouldn't be able to hang in there until we got the COVID era behind us. But I guess now, really, the worries that are keeping me up into the wee hours in the morning are more towards just sort of Houston in general from like a macro perspective. Because if you think about how far we've come, how much we've sort of rallied the community around this idea of developing an innovation economy and a startup community, we've come farther. We've got more momentum than we ever have before. It's not even close. And there's been some false starts over the last couple of decades, but we're really, really in a spot that's exciting and can stick and is making significant impact and is creating jobs and creating new innovative businesses. And we've never been here as a city. And it's been a big push from a whole coalition of organizations. And so I what keeps me up at night is trying to consider how we make sure we don't lose any of this momentum, because we're in a really good, really exciting spot. And we just, it's not an option for us as a city to lose this momentum right now, because, you know, we can't even think about what it would take to regain it, because the work that's gone into it has been so incredible.
I agree with that sentiment for sure. I also want to go back to kind of, you know, your doomsday mindset, because I'm sure there's a lot of startups still in that mindset. So I wonder if you have any advice for startup founders who are kind of fearing the worst for their company and are in that you know, headspace of terror.
Yeah, well, I would say shake yourself out of that mindset, because I so admire the heart of the entrepreneur. The world needs entrepreneurs. It needs people who want to, you know, excel beyond the common course and not fall in the line working for someone else, working for a corporation. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course, but there needs to be people who are creating things from nothing and choosing the harder, more difficult path. I mean, starting a company is really, really difficult. Elon Musk says that it's like eating glass and staring into the abyss of death. And it is. And so I admire the heart of the entrepreneur and would encourage them to shake themselves out of any sort of mindset funk that they have, and to consider deeply and as creatively as possible ways that they can, if not make real, tangible, hard progress in their business right now, to at least think innovatively about how they can best use their time to prepare for a future when things do get back to normal. And I think there's a lot of ways to do that. And of course, if there are specific ways that you think, you know, our organization can be helpful to you guys, then please do reach out to us.
think a lot of startup founders really needed to hear that. And they know now how to access, you know, the Canon's resources in this time. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing that and sharing kind of your thoughts on where we're at as a city, co-working as an industry, and definitely startups.
Yeah, it's a pleasure as always. Thanks for having me, Natalie.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Please consider hitting subscribe, sharing with a friend, or giving us 5 stars. Tune in next week with another episode.